Hello, Ramblers and Gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. An email, Rambling and Gambling Podcast at gmail.com. Coming to you from Bemidji, Minnesota today, visiting my in-laws, dealing with some canceled flights. Hope to be back in DC by the time you hear this. We'll see. But if the audio sounds a little different, that's why. It is also why when I post clips on social, there will be a 9-pound walleye mounted on the wall behind me. Listeners will be very surprised to hear, I'm sure, that yours truly was not the one to catch it. A little update from last week's pod. Our expert, Matt Perrault, said his bet of the week was the Raiders +3 home game, season on the line. He nailed it. Exciting game. They covered. We now hit, at least three of these in a row. The expert picks. Awesome stuff. Also, I nailed cash or trash last week too. Snapped a losing streak there. Took Saints -4.5. They covered. On to this week. I am pumped. I am psyched. I am insert adjective here because it is time for the NFL playoffs. Bringing back a podcast favorite for what I believe they're calling Super Wild Card Weekend because they have a game on Monday this year too. He's a data scientist for Pro Football Focus. He's the host of the incredible Unexpected Points podcast. We had him on to preview week 4 of the NFL season and he crushed it. Made yours truly a couple of bucks. Here he is, Kevin Cole. Kev, welcome back to the Rambling and Gambling podcast, my man. Appreciate you coming back.
Well, appreciate being back. And we survived. We survived the NFL season. Well, not the season, the regular season. I'll put that a good little asterisk on them. We survived the regular season so far.
Yeah, so far so good. Let's see how we do during the playoffs. We're gonna skip the pleasantries today, skip the small talk. I want to dive right in to the 6 matchups for this weekend and this year, I guess, for Monday night too. We're gonna do them in order. You probably remember the deal. All these lines are from FanDuel as of Tuesday afternoon. I'll give you the game, the line, a little setup, and then you just take it anywhere you want to go. You don't have to give a pick unless you want to. And let's have some fun. Right.
Sounds good.
First up, Raiders at Cincy, Bengals laying 6, over under 49. This one's at 4:30 on Saturday. Raiders, pretty incredible run into the postseason, given everything that they've dealt with. John Gruden, the tragic situation that they've been dealing with. They finished 10-7, beat the Chargers in OT in the very last game of the regular season. It's their 4th straight win. And now they've got the Bengals. Cincy was 25-1 to win the AFC North this year. They pulled it off, also finished 10-7, lost to the Browns in a basically meaningless Week 18 game. Before that, had knocked off the Chiefs, Ravens, and Broncos in the previous 3 weeks. Kevin, take it away, man. What do you think?
Yeah, this one is the one that I actually have the strongest opinion on or strongest lean on, and that is towards the Raiders. Now, I understand the Bengals are a little bit of a darling team after, like you mentioned, what they did against Kansas City. Jamar Chase is now looking like the offensive rookie of the year. Joe Burrow is in the MVP adjacent conversation. I don't know if he's in the MVP conversation, but he's, you know, number one or number two, depending upon how you look at it in our PFF grade. So, you know, they've been on a strong, strong offensive performance the last few weeks. The thing is about their team is they have an up or down season so far. They started very hot on a bunch of the riding on the back of a lot of big plays. Jamar Chase kind of disappeared and they lost 4 of 6 games during the middle of the season. And then they came on strong there at the end. So those types of teams, while the getting is good, they can look like they can beat anyone, but then at other times it's not looking so hot. And as far as Burrow is concerned, he does have the highest sack rate in the NFL. And the Raiders team, what's different about this Raiders team than prior Raiders team is they have guys who can generate pressures, including Max Crosby, who led the NFL in pressures this year. So I think that's probably something that's a little bit underrated. They can't protect Burrow. They're highly dependent upon long or run after the catch plays by Jamar Chase, and it has a defense that can finally stop that. So I think for that reason, these two teams are probably a little bit closer match than that. I still think the Bengals are a better team. Obviously, they're going to be at home. This is going to be in the cold, all that sort of stuff. They have all of those advantages, but I think it's hard to stretch out that far when the Bengals, to me, are not really an upper tier team in the AFC.
sounds like this is a strong value play for you. That six is just too much. Is that accurate?
Six is too much. I mean, I could probably play. I mean, there's not a whole lot between, you know, 3.5 and 5.5, but six is definitely too much. Even at something like 3.5, I might have a slight lean towards the Raiders, but anything in that range, I mean, you'll see it could move a bit in the upcoming days, but unless it gets, you know, up to 6.5 or down to, you know, 3.5, it's not really a significant move there. I think anywhere in that area, the Raiders are a bit of a lean.
You also mentioned Burrow MVP. That's not crazy. I don't think he's going to win, but most books that I've seen do have him third right now, a distant third between Brady and Rodgers, but third nonetheless. So I'm glad.
Well, yeah, it helps when you put up, you know, 950 passing yards over the last couple of weeks of the season.
Just the two games against the Ravens, he threw for over 900. It's crazy. Game number two, New England at Buffalo. Bills laying 4, over under 43.5. This one's a night game on Saturday. Pats finished season 10-7. They're kind of limping in. At one point in the season, they were technically the one seed in the AFC. Now they've lost 3 of their last 4 to the Dolphins, Bills, and Colts. And of course, everybody remembers those two matchups against Buffalo. They won the first one 14-10. That was the game where Mac throws just 3 passes the whole game, 2 completions. Game number two, they drop 33-21. Josh Allen's a beast, completes 30 passes, throws for 314 yards, 3 touchdowns, ran for another 64 yards too. They are 11-6, and the AFC's 3 seed. Kevin, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, this, I don't think we're going to see a replay of what, well, hopefully we won't see a replay of what we saw the first time they played in Buffalo. Though, as of now, I know that Dean Pease will tell us that computers can't tell you the weather, but as of now, it's looking like it's going to be one of these, you know, 5-10 degree sort of days out there in Buffalo. So I don't think they're exactly going to be slinging it out there. I mean, I have this as pretty fairly priced. I'm normally a little bit higher on the Bills and lower on the Patriots than the market is, but the market's flipped around, as you mentioned, over these last few weeks. If you look at the first time they played each other in Buffalo, it was under 3. It did not get the 3, it did not get over 3. And then when they played in New England after that, again, it stayed on 3. So when you're between the 3, it's basically home advantage type of flip with maybe a little bit of the market moving towards New England between those two games. And now we're over it. We're over the 3. So I think in that point, it shows you how the market's leaning further towards Buffalo. And that's why I would stay off of it. I mean, I think Buffalo has the better team. Buffalo's been running the ball a lot better recently, which is going to help them in these conditions. But at the same point in time, the Patriots defense can force turnovers, and Josh Allen, even when he's playing well, has a higher turnover risk than most quarterbacks do there. So I think this is a fair line here. If it dipped under 3 for any reason, which I don't suspect it's going to happen, then I would lean heavily towards the Bills. But right here, this is the fairest price I see on any of the games this weekend.
Does the Belichick playoff mojo aura do anything for you here?
I mean, I can't do it. If anything, like if it was priced in any sort of way, then I would probably fade it, but it doesn't seem like any of that is being priced in, despite the fact that supposedly he did some sort of Jedi mind tricks on McDermott the first game. It didn't seem to work so well the second game.
Yeah, he used up all of his Jedi mind tricks.
Yeah,
one, I guess.
Saving it for the playoffs, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see if they can this time around. Sunday, 1 o'clock, Eagles at the Bucks. Bucks laying 8.5, over under 49. Tampa, NFC's 2 seed. Philly's in the 7th spot. Eagles finished 9-8. Lost to the Cowboys in week 18, but had rolled in 4 straight before that, although this was absolutely subpar opponents. 2 wins against the Washington football team, 1 against the Giants, 1 against the Jets. Tampa, meanwhile, finishes 13-4, wins 7 of their last 8, although they're very banged up. And of course, Kevin, we all know about the Antonio Brown saga. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, when I run my numbers on this, we're only putting, you know, a little bit of a weighting behind the non-quarterback injury concerns that we have for the Bucs, because, you know, there've been injuries during the entire season. It's not as if this is something that's totally new to them. But it is a little bit different when we're talking about what's happening in the pass catchers. And, you know, not only, you know, Godwin's been out here, Antonio Brown, who you mentioned, they're bringing guys in like Cyril Grayson that's playing a lot of snaps. Even he got banged up in the last game. And Evans and Gronkowski, the two players they're really going to have to rely on, they're not exactly, you know, warriors as far as being able to play through these injuries. I'm sure they would love to, but they've had lots of injury concerns also. So I think that's going to be the question, is whether they can get everyone through this game healthy. And then on the flip side of things, it's going to be about the Eagles' running game, the top rushing offense in the NFL, kind of similar to the Ravens' offense that we'd seen in prior years, going up against a Buccaneers defense, which, you know, has kind of fallen off a bit on their run defense. If you looked at, I mean, teams just generally did not run against them, especially with Vita Vea in there, but that flipped a little bit during the middle of the season. The teams got a little bit better against them against the run, but I do think that that's really going to be the matchup where the Buccaneers will be able to control them. So for that reason, again, I mean, I wish I had something really interesting to say on this one. For this, it's a little bit close. I'd lean slightly towards Tampa, but again, I don't price in necessarily the injury risk, maybe to the degree that's necessary when you have clusters of injuries and missing players like you do for the wide receivers and for the weapons for the Bucs.
Have you personally ever lost a job, taken your shirt off and run out in a blaze of glory?
No, I can't say I have. Although, I mean, it's not something that I wanted to have seen, but if you would have gone out full striptease down all the way down, I think that could have just been a legend. That could really have gone down as a legendary performance, because I have a feeling, despite how good he is, I don't know if he's making back to the NFL again this time. But then again, I probably would have said that after he refused to wear helmet, the correct helmet for the Raiders, and then tried to like a spray paint an old helmet and bring that in. And then he had his problems with the Patriots and then this. So who knows what'll happen next with Antonio Brown?
I bet he gets another chance somewhere. Guys, that talented.
It's possible. He still looked good. He was still performing well. He was still the number one. I think he got something like 50% of the targets the week before he came back there for that last week from Tom Brady. So, you know, he's still getting open.
Also a sneaky good Instagram follow. Never a dull moment with all AD. Well,
I haven't done that, but I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. I've seen podcasts. Maybe you should invite him on here. He looks like he's making the round in podcast appearances.
I tell you what, open invitation. I would be happy to. I'm sure he's listening. So AB, anytime you want, man, give me a holler. We'll have you on. Sunday 4:30, kind of a throwback to my 90s childhood here. San Fran at Dallas. Cowboys favored by 3, over under 51. Niners finished 6th in the conference, squeak in with a comeback in LA against the Rams. Fun one to watch. 10-7 on the year, won 4 of their last 5, knocking off the Rams, Texans, Falcons, Bengals during that stretch. Cowboys, 3rd overall in the NFC, finished 12-5, won 5 of their last 6. Beat teams that weren't exactly great during that run. The Eagles, WFTs twice, the Giants and the Saints. Cap, I have a feeling that Sharps are going to be all over San Fran in this one. Are you in agreement there with that?
I mean, I think it's going to be price dependent. I mean, you mentioned how the San Francisco, I mean, so I think just generally, if you're going to look at San Francisco as a team, I think they're fairly close to Dallas. Maybe not quite equal to Dallas, but I think they're fairly close. But the thing is, again, this is something that's priced in to a degree here. The spread is the narrowest spread of any game this weekend. So I think it's one of those situations where if you asked 100 people on the street, you know, how much better are the Cowboys versus the 49ers, they would probably have a much higher opinion of the Cowboys vis-a-vis the 49ers than what you're seeing on people who are actually, you know, placing their dollars where their mouth is, where their thoughts are on this game. So for that reason, I think 3, I still have a little bit of value here on the 49ers. 3.5 with the hook there would be nice. I know it's been going down there. I think at 2.5, maybe you could even play the other side since that 3 number is so important. But to me, again, this again falls into that bucket of probably a little bit too close to call. We'll see what's happening with Trent Williams. I think that's going to be an important designation, someone who could be the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL right now for the 49ers. It looks like he's going to play. He's number one as far as all offensive tackles in this game, and that's going to be important to keeping that pass rush down for Dallas. And it's really going to be about a Cowboys defense that's been heavily, heavily, heavily reliant upon turnovers during the first 3 quarters of the season. If they can turn over Jimmy Garoppolo, who has a tendency to do that, but then Jimmy's also has a tendency to be able to score when they need it, like he did the last couple of weeks of the season. So again, this is one just really too close to call. If it flipped up, like I said, in either direction from 3, then I think it would get interesting.
You're a big part of PFF's quarterback grades. How big of a difference is it for you having a banged up Garoppolo back there versus a, you know, young, inexperienced Trey Lance?
It is a big difference. If you look at what happened with betting spreads in the week that Garoppolo was called out, it's always difficult to say this just a couple of weeks ago with Trey Lance playing. It's difficult because there's a lot of knowledge out there. I think betting markets seem to be leading indicators sometimes as opposed to reacting to news when it comes to injuries. But the line did move a few points. Now, it was already in the teens because they were playing against the Texans in that game, but the line did move a few points. I know that Lance played well-ish near the end of that game, but they also had 3 points midway through the third quarter against the Texans in that game. So I think they just run really different offenses with the two of them in there. And against a Cowboys team where you're going to need to put up points, where you're going to be behind potentially in the game, I think in those situations, you having Garoppolo and his ability to come back like they did from a 17-point deficit last week, like they did with a minute and a half left in the fourth quarter, needing to go 80-something yards with no timeouts. Those are sorts of things that I think they'd be much more comfortable doing it with Garoppolo than doing it with Lance.
Steelers at Chiefs. Chiefs favored by 12.5, over under 46. This is a Sunday nighter. I can't believe the Steelers made it in. 9-7. Mike Tomlin, man, the guy wins games. Say what you want, he wins games. Big Ben, not done yet. They won 3 of their last 4, and here is a potential positive with them. Every team they beat during that stretch, winning 3 of 4, the Ravens, Browns, Titans, they were also fighting for the playoffs at the time of that matchup. Defense has held up pretty well, too. They gave up 14 or fewer points in each of those wins. Chiefs, they're the 2 seed, 12-5, won 9 of their last 10, but that loss to the Bengals a couple of weeks ago knocked them out of the 1 seed, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, 12.5 points. So by numbers that I'm looking back at, and this is going back a decade and a half, this is the largest spread of any wild card matchup that we've seen, period. I joked that this was, while not technically a bye, maybe as close to a bye as you could get for a team here like Kansas City. At the same time, we don't want to overweight what happened last time where they jumped all over them and, you know, won by 30 points, and that ended up happening. I mean, unfortunately for me, because just looking at this, my numbers actually lean a little bit towards Pittsburgh because of how huge this spread is. But unfortunately, it's one of those ones where I don't think you could feel good about betting on the Steelers no matter what the number was. But at this particular number, I mean, I have it being more like a 10-point spread in this one. It just really depends on how big of an impact you think some of these injuries that we've seen for the Steelers are having. And it's also going to depend on the other side. I know that, you know, Tyreek Hill, he looked like he could have been a bit gimpy. We'll see what happens there. But even with that, I can understand why people would heavily value Kansas City, but I have a slight lean towards Pittsburgh. And sometimes it's the ones that you kind of hate the most in theory that end up being the best value because you're, you know, fighting against the popular tide going in the other direction.
Think you end up playing it, or is it a stay away for you?
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to play it. I mean, it's not that much to play. So I mean, I've already played it. So we'll see what ends up happening if it goes down from here, but I don't think it's going to move that much. It's possible it could get a little bit more narrow, but I don't think it's going to move that much.
All right, last game of the wild card round. It's a Monday nighter, which feels so crazy to say for a playoff game. We've got Arizona in LA versus the Rams. Let's see, Rams favored by 4, over under 49.5. Of course, we've already seen this matchup twice this season. The Cards won the first, they lost the second. Arizona finished 11-6, had a shot to win the NFC West, which they had led for most of the season, but they dropped one in week 18 against Seattle. Rams finished 12-5, won 5 of their last 6, but they also blew it in week 18, losing to the Niners. Something to keep in mind in this one, the Rams were a lot better on the road this year. They finished 8-1, and their win against the Cards came in Arizona. They lost the LA game, which again is where this one is being played. Kevin, what do you got?
Yeah, this is one where I'm leaning a little bit towards the Rams on this. I'm actually slightly surprised that it's only 4 points. I mean, I guess you could say that you never really know whether this is an actual home field advantage in this case. If you're going to budget in, you know, travel as one of your inputs for how much that affects the team, there's not much going on in that regard when it comes to the Cardinals there. Maybe you could think that you're playing against recency bias by being for the Cardinals here. But what I've seen defensively from them is a team that was making some big plays against some poor offenses early in the season. In the second half of the season, over the last several weeks, they really haven't had a good defensive performance, including against the Lions, including against the Carolina Panthers when Cam was first coming back. So that's what I'd be concerned about. And the Rams, you know, this sounds like a big but or except to throw in here, but except for these Matt Stafford really awful pick six types of plays, which who knows, that could happen in this game. But other than that, just internally, this Rams offense has still been very, very strong this season. So the fact that they're, you know, they're over the three, they're over the 3.5, but I still think I have a little bit of my numbers have a little bit of lean toward the Rams because they are fundamentally more like a top five team, whereas the Cardinals are really more like a top 10 team.
What do you think of having a playoff game on Monday night?
It's interesting, to say the very least. I don't think whoever wins this game, if the Cowboys handle business, is going to enjoy having one less day of rest and then going out to Green Bay potentially next week. I think that's really going to be the big concern for these teams, is whether they feel like there's any sort of competitive disadvantage. But there's definitely not a disadvantage in the bank account of the NFL when it comes to getting people to watch these games. So I guess it's a natural progression towards NFL every night of the week, eventually in another 15, 20 years.
I know the players aren't going to like it. The coaches aren't going to like it. Do you think it would be a competitive disadvantage to have one fewer day?
It is. I mean, it's not a lot. I mean, from what I price in, it's anywhere from a quarter to maybe a third of a point difference. So it's not that big of a deal. Clearly they're not going to schedule these guys for Saturday. So like, that's one thing I think that they'll definitely prevent. But it's going to be a difference than, you know, it's a competitive disadvantage of them, even if they're playing on Sunday, vis-a-vis it would have been the prior season going into, let's say, playing the Packers, who are coming off of a bye. It's still one less day to rest up and a night game. So, I mean, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing, but the NFL has been dealing with lots of things. So I don't think players are necessarily going to complain that much.
Before we move on, it sounded to me, going through all those games, like Raiders plus six over Cincy was kind of your play of the weekend. Am I reading that right?
That is. Yeah, that's correct. That would rank number one for me. Next is maybe, you know, the Rams or the Steelers. I'm not quite as confident about. And the rest of them, I think, are pretty much coin flips.
Kevin, it is now time for a segment we call Cash or Trash. We've done this before, but we were still calling it Josh's Juice at the time. Then we switched it to...
You went from alliteration to rhyming, so I like that.
Well, we went from alliteration to rhyming because it was Josh's Juice, and then it was Long Shot or Lock. Now, just as of last week, it's Cash or Trash. And we also, the dramatic pauses I just made at the first go through on Cash or Trash, that's because we have cheesy sound effects now too.
All right.
Anywho, here's the deal. I give you a bet I like. I tell you why. You tell me whether it is cash or trash. And by the way, when you were on last, this was way back, you and I were previewing week four. I went with a Baltimore, Kansas City, two-team, six-point tease, a little long teaser. It hits pretty easily, in fact. So let's see
there
if we
you
can
go.
Do it again. Okay.
Never missed. Never, yeah. Never lost.
Well, no, I do. I know that. Listeners know that's not true. So, but keep it in mind when I give you this gem here.
Our combination has never lost before. So there you go.
There you go. Yeah, me and you together. We're a team. I'm going with Eagles over 19.5 points against Tampa Bay. I think the Eagles score over 19.5 against Tampa. Here's why. The Eagles, we talked about it, they like to run the ball. They also like to throw deep. You know what Tampa is really good at stopping? Well, they're really good at stopping teams that run the ball and throw deep. However, Tampa's banged up. They're really banged up. I personally think they win this one, but I think that total for the Eagles is too low. I think Levante David being on IR makes it a lot tougher to stop Jalen Hurts on the ground. The Eagles, this is key, the Eagles O-line appears to be pretty healthy for the first time in a long time. Also, back in October, the Bucs had won four of their first five. The Eagles were garbage in the first half. In fact, they got booed at home. They still ended up scoring 22. Hurts ran for two touchdowns. Levante David wasn't playing in that one either. I think, at worst, this one has backdoor cover written all over it. Philly's done that all season long. So that is why I like Eagles to go over 19.5 points. Kevin, keep it real. I can take it. Is this one cash or trash?
I'll throw it in the cash category. I mean, you have a lot of factors working.
Hold on, wait. Could you say it? Can you say it dramatically so we have time to put the sound effect in? Say
okay.
Yeah, give it.
That one for me is cash.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Thank you. All right, go for it. How come it's
bring it up? Okay, so yeah, for the Eagles, I'm a Jalen Hurts truther or believer, however you want to frame it. So I agree that he is especially good at throwing the ball long, but he's also developed a pretty good connection with Dallas Goedert in the last few weeks. And how the Bucs are going to need to stop them, they've also offensively, which people have noticed, obviously, when you look at the eye-popping numbers that Tom Brady has, but also offensively, they run at a pretty quick pace. So they're a fast-paced team, and I think the Eagles are going to match some of that pace at the same time when they're going to try to go a little bit more up-tempo to deal with the run defense against the Bucs. So I think you're going to have a tailwind in that regard. You're obviously going to have you're not going to have the weather concerns there, at least when it comes to cold and probably wind that you're going to have in other places. So I think you have a lot of tailwinds and a lot of different outs in order to get this. And like I said, I'm just a believer in the Eagles offense where I have Jalen Hurts ranked right outside of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He has been that good, even though some people are maybe a little bit slow to recognize it after being a second round pick last year.
Can we wrap this up with some semi quick hitters?
Sure, let's do it.
Two teams we haven't talked about because they have byes are the Packers and the Titans. You don't have to go too in-depth here, but what do you think of those two teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm high like everyone else is on the Packers, especially if we're talking about David Bakhtiari coming back. We're talking about Jair Alexander coming back. We don't know at what capacity those guys are going to be, especially Bakhtiari, who has been in and out as far as his availability, his timeline was going to be when he's coming back. He only played a little bit last week, and then he actually hit the tent at one point. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think the Packers have everything's coming together. Everyone has to come through Lambeau. I think their Achilles heel could be a situation where the 49ers beat the Cowboys, and then it will be the 49ers coming to Green Bay. And that defense on Green Bay, that has been a problem. They've had a problem on defense. Jair Alexander is not going to help them stop the running game there. So that is the game I'm really, really interested to see. I think Tampa Bay is at a lower level than they were last year. So, you know, eventually we're talking about the NFC Championship now at this point. If that matchup ends up happening, I would think the Packers actually want that to happen. And that's why they're a pretty strong favorite to make the Super Bowl this year.
Titans do anything for you?
They do a little bit for me, not quite as much. I mean, I'm not going to read too much into Derrick Henry coming back because I'm, as a nerd, I am contractually obligated to, you know, downplay the effect of Henry. And as someone who has actually had the same injury that he's had, not quite at the, you know, top level athlete like he is, you know, but I have had that same injury. And, you know, other guys like Dez Bryant had that and tried to come back during the season. Julio Jones has had that same injury and just sat out the entire year. It's not necessarily something guys come back from during the season. It's normally a slow healing injury. It's normally an injury that's very sensitive to doing a lot of cutting, which Henry is going to be doing. So I don't know. I'm not sold on him because unfortunately, again, we're talking about a big examples here, but Dez Bryant was a guy who had a Jones fracture, came back, didn't look the same when he tried to come back at the end of the season. In fact, really never looked the same again. I think there was other factors at play, of course, there, but it's not necessarily something where I'm banking on the fact that he's going to give them some huge boost going into the offseason. And they're just not, you can't really make the case for them being the best team in the AFC. I don't think anyone does at this point. And, you know, they're not even the favorite to get out of the conference despite having the bye. And I believe that's probably the smart thing to say.
Sorry for jumping in there. How did you get your Jones fracture?
Not an exciting story. I just used to do a lot of running and whatnot, and then I got this pain in my foot, and then I just kept on running, and then pain got worse and worse, and then I went to the doctor, and I just kept on running on it until I probably just turned like a stress fracture into something a little bit more serious. So I mean, it was like I had to have a screw put in there and everything else. It doesn't heal well. It's like the very end of the outside of the foot. It does not heal well in that spot, and I think that's why a lot of players just go ahead and rest up and don't come back until the next season, even if they're not going to come back the last couple of weeks of the season. So I was surprised to see him back. But then again, you know, Cam Akers is coming back from Achilles tears after however many weeks. Again, that's another one where it just shocks me that's happening.
And that one in particular blows me away. The Jones fracture too, because you hear guys talk about it just like you did, and they say it's hard to come back from that one. You're a big part of PFF's quarterback rankings. This is a three-parter. Who finished up top? Who's at the bottom? Who was your personal biggest surprise?
Yeah, I mean, so the top here, and this was back and forth during most of the season, and Tom Brady slightly edged out Aaron Rodgers at the end. And I felt a little silly that that ended up happening according to my numbers, and I kind of had to go with it because I was defending Rodgers vis-a-vis Brady when it came to some other gentlemen in the company who were leaning a little bit more heavily on our grades, where Brady is graded a lot better than Rodgers this season. But one of the reasons that I have Brady up there is I mentioned the fast pace of the Bucs. So, you know, he's played 1.5 more games, so there's that to it. One of those games being a game that was missed, and whatever responsibility you want to give or not give to Aaron Rodgers for missing that game. But another thing is they throw the ball more often and they play at a quicker pace. So he's had about 700, more like 750 attempts this season versus 570-ish attempts for Aaron Rodgers. And again, that's not just more playing time. They're more reliant upon him this year. So I think it's more impressive that he's able to do that against lighter boxes generally too, because of the offense that they run, all of that combined, you know, wide receiver injuries, everything else that's happened. I think that puts Brady as the number one guy, although only a smidge over Rodgers.
Okay. Okay. Who is last and who is your biggest surprise? You don't have to go super in depth with these.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, last is Zach Wilson. So
that's kind of interesting, though, because there were certainly some contenders this year for last.
There were some contenders. I mean, if you look at the last, I don't know, six or seven here, when we go to 26th, Justin Fields, 27th, Trevor Lawrence, then Goff, Davis Mills, Sam Darnold, Ben Roethlisberger, and Zach Wilson being last. I mean, the thing with Wilson is, he looked like he might have had a little bit of an upward trajectory after having what you'd probably call his best game of the season against the Bucs 2 weeks ago. And then last week, whether it's weather, whether it's anything else, we were talking about, you know, like 50 yards of offense for the team. They had a 40-yard touchdown on fourth down, but then other than that, there really wasn't anything else that they've been doing. And his grading is also near the bottom. Ben Roethlisberger is the only quarterback who has a worse grade right now out of the main starting options there. So that's how he ends up near the bottom. But a couple of young guys you want to get excited about, which are a little bit surprising, would have been very surprised to hear that both of these guys made it into the top notch. But right after Aaron Rodgers, there's a bit of a gap here to the next tier, but the next tier does have Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow as the two next players. They're both second year quarterbacks. So that's something to get excited about in the NFL, where we're having some turnover with some of the older quarterbacks like Breeze and others and Rivers over the years. It's good to see these young names start to play well, because we had some dark times there when, you know, the Blake Bortleses of the world were a top five quarterbacks who top five picks that were coming into the league, and we were relying upon them to be the next generation.
I've heard the Burroughs Herbert debate quite a bit recently. It seems to me like, and you know, just based on popular opinion, that Burrow's pulling ahead. Where are you with that?
You know, you say that, but I don't know. I bet if you went, you know, this is like the theoretical, if you went to all 32 front offices, or maybe 31, or maybe 30 if you're not going to either one of the front offices there, and you said, who would you rather have, Herbert or Burrow? I think more people would say Herbert, just because of the fact that not only he's younger, despite playing all 4 years, because Burrow was so much older, he doesn't have the injury history here. And you know, Burrow takes a lot of sacks. That's the one thing that has been holding down his numbers a bit. You could say that's all on the offensive line, but I think there's always a strong quarterback contribution to that. So not only does that kind of lower some of his ceiling for where he could be as a quarterback if that continues, but it also raises that injury risk. And when it comes to arm talent, I think Burrow has tremendous anticipation and a better than most people acknowledge type of arm. But when it comes to offensive coordinators, you know, or scouts watching the tape and, you know, getting all hot and bothered, no one does that more than Justin Herbert, and no one is going to capture in people's hearts and imaginations what they could do if they had this, you know, quarterback robot to go in there and basically execute what they want to do on offense. So for that reason, I think people would lean Herbert over Burrow.
he's got such a cannon. And I for what it's worth, I am team Herbert in this. Yeah. I think the kid's really good. Two more for you. You're doing a teams in transition series on the Always Amazing Unexpected Points pod. You want to give me a quick one? I think you've only done, unless I'm mistaken, Cleveland so far. Give me one team big move they need to make.
Yeah, I mean, so I talked with a co-host of mine that I have on Tuesdays now, Ben Brown, who is a long-suffering, in denial of even being a Vikings fan, which there probably are a few out there. So I think when it comes to the Vikings, they are probably in one of the most difficult situations in the NFL. We know they're going to have a new coach, a new GM, and when it comes to attractiveness of that job, you could say they are a handful of plays away from making the playoffs, but at the same point in time, this has been a handful of years now that they have been operating their cap, operating their offseason moves as if they're one player away of potentially getting there. And when you do that over and over and over again, I think they have something like 8 players accounting for $140-150 million on their cap next year, including $45 million for Kirk Cousins next year. So they're at a real inflection point here because there's no real way to offload Kirk Cousins when it comes to that, unless someone wants to take on a $35 million guaranteed contract when they let him out there. So they're going to have to decide whether they go in or not. I think now is the time to at least start to ease out so that you could officially cut the cord next season. But I know the way that NFL front offices normally operate is push the chips back in one more time, one more season. If everything goes right, then we can go on a playoff run. So I think that's really the decision there. And for me, it is looking to see if you can take salary and trade Kirk Cousins if possible. But even if not, even if you can't do that, it isn't, again, to try to push things in and leverage it up to the hilt and delay the needed restructuring that's going to happen this season. Because I just don't think they can get there in the NFC next year, even if everything goes right.
I'm in Minnesota right now. I've been in Minnesota a lot lately. I was in Rochester watching Vikings Lions a few weeks ago with right. Vikings fans. It was yeah. a lot of like depression and
self-loathing
and also just like accepting of their fate. It was a tough experience.
Yeah, yeah. They're one of the few fan bases that when you say something nice about their quarterback, they get mad at you.
Right.
They're legitimately upset. They're legitimately upset if you say something nice about the team, and that's never a good sign. And I think Zimmer is like a good coach, right? Like he is obviously defensively, he's an excellent coach. So it's not as if replacing him is going to be some sort of uptick in competence when it comes to coaching, I think, either. I mean, maybe stylistically, there's some advantages offensively that can end up happening, but I think no matter who they bring in, it's probably going to be a net negative in the short term when it comes to that defense. So that's another thing that just makes it that much harder for them in 2022 to really make a run. And I think Aaron Rodgers is going to stay in Green Bay also. I'm fairly confident in that. So we'll see.
It seems like it could happen. I do think Rodgers is just kind of unpredictable at this point. I think it's really hard to know what he is thinking.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think they've done a lot of damage control there. And for all of the grief that Aaron Rodgers has gotten, everything else that's happened, you haven't heard a peep out of them. If anything, they probably helped facilitate his desire to, you know, play it the way that he played it there. And so I think behind the scenes, he probably appreciates that. He seems someone who really seems to appreciate, I don't know if loyalty is the right word, but he seems to appreciate feeling valued and feeling like he's the center of the universe. And they've done that this season.
Speaking of the Packers, last one I've got for you. I don't know if you're going to say the Packers as your answer to this, yeah. But who do you have winning it all? Who's your Super Bowl pick? Don't worry about odds or anything like that. Just who do you think wins it?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say the Packers, but you know, I like the Bills a lot more than some other teams. And that's something where I think they actually have a stronger team than they did last year because of how good they've been in coverage defensively. I mean, we saw what they did to Kansas City just this year, and I feel like that could play out again in the playoffs. I know everyone's very, very high on Kansas City, but I feel like Kansas City's defense is just not quite have the same stability that the Bills have. And Josh Allen, he's not playing as well as he did last year, but that was impossible to play that well again. He is still significantly better than the 2018 and 2019 version. So I feel like if you can get high-end quarterback play out of him for a few weeks, but that defense can also help make up for some of the turnovers that you may get for him. So I think they could go on a run in a little bit of a weaker AFC. So they would be my sleeper-ish type of pick, would be the Bills to come out of it. But the Packers are the favorites because they have the bye and because they have the home field advantage and because they have, you know, top one or two quarterback in the NFL.
What else, man? Are we missing anything?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that this season in particular, maybe we should have a little bit less confidence in what we saw during the regular season. So that's something I'm trying to build in even to the numbers that I have because of it. You know, you normally have injuries you can have, but you never have clusters of players who are missing in situations like this. So because of that, I am a little bit more hesitant to downgrade certain units when they've performed so poorly, like the Packers defense, honestly. So that's another reason I give them a little bit of like a bump even above what I've seen from the numbers, because I feel like these teams can get things together a little bit better than you might suspect in a normal year where they've had like ample time of practice. They've had ample time to try new things during the season and nothing has ended up clicking. Here, you could have some teams that find some new things that end up clicking in the playoffs that you weren't expecting.
Something for gamblers to keep in mind too, for sure. Kevin, where can listeners find you? What do you have coming down the pike? Plug away.
Yeah, so you can find me. You know, I'm always on Twitter arguing with people at Kevin Cole PFF. I have the Unexpected Points podcast that you mentioned, and you know, content over at pff.com. Tomorrow, I think we're going to publish a couple of pieces where I use this, you know, very nerdy methodology to try to get like a points-based value for different players using our grades, using traditional stats, using advanced stats, and like these clusters of players for on-off splits. Anyway, it's a little bit of a thing, but I'll have a description in there and I try to lay it out as best as I can, where I'm looking at all the non-quarterbacks, one piece offensive, one piece defensive, to try to have like a point value basis that you can measure these players against each other to have a better idea of, you know, who are the most valuable players, not only within one position group, but then in the entire NFL. When we have this discussion every year, MVP, why not just call it the best quarterback, because the quarterback is so much more valuable. And I kind of agree on that, but let's go ahead and take the quarterback out of the equation and try to have a real discussion about who are the most valuable players in 2021 for the other positions.
I won't make you spoil it, but that's interesting. I'm looking forward to reading that one.
Well, it's not a spoiler defensively, at least Aaron Donald is on there. But I think there are some spoilers about guys like AJ Terrell this season, who played really well, who's pretty close to the top. And then on the offensive side of the ball, you know, I'll say it's either one of Cooper Kupp, Trent Williams, or Jonathan Taylor, but Jonathan Taylor's a little bit lower than some people. Some people may think on that one. Sorry, again, contractually obligated to nail the running backs on that, but he doesn't make 10. I'll get away.
Your work is always excellent. Truthfully, I'm looking forward to reading that column. Thank you so much for coming on. Great podcast guest, Kevin Cole, Pro Football Focus. Happy betting this playoffs, man.
All right.
There it is, ladies and gents. RNG episode 23 in the books. The first ever rambling and gambling playoff preview coming to you from Bemidji, Minnesota. As always, thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday. We're bringing back another fan fave. This has been fun after not repeating guests all season long, pretty much. Inviting people to come back for a second time around. I've really enjoyed this. This was great with Kevin today. He's phenomenal, and I think you're really going to like our guest next week as well. Hope you'll join us. You know the deal, as I always tell you. Have a great week.